This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Shall we begin?
Expecto Patronum!
We brought back!
You were attacked after leaving her apartment.
Holmes, how do you know this?
The face powder on your coat tells me of her height and her affection for you. You, held her close before departing.
Steady, Holmes.
It's all there for the trained eye to read, Watson.
But look here, why couldn't he have been attacked on his way to the woman's apartment?
The mark of a blow has erased some of the powder. Obviously, if the attack came first, the powder would have remained undisturbed.
And the full lips? That was a guess.
I never guess, Watson. You have rubbed the lipstick from your face with the handkerchief you now hold in your hand. And that amount of lipstick never came from a pair of thin lips.
And the blonde hair? Good gracious me.
Hello, everybody. You are listening to Popcorn Culture with Lee Tree Lynn, Sharmila Ganesan, and Arvind Yuvaraj. And we are going to, well, this week, we're going to be reviewing Enola Holmes, which is why for Throwback Tuesday, we thought that it would be appropriate to talk about, what did you say before we went on air, Sharmila? The most?
Oh, the most. Sherlock Holmes is apparently one of the most depicted literary characters on screen.
Which makes sense. And because of that, we didn't want to play favorites and pick like one movie to throw back to. Instead, we're going to be talking about Sherlock Holmes as a concept, a character on TV, in movies, just the various iterations of Sherlock Holmes that we've seen over the years.
Yes, I think Sherlock Holmes in himself is such a... like people get an idea in their mind when you say Sherlock Holmes, right? From the jacket to the cap to the
pipe
and the Watson. So I feel like he's one of those characters that are both incredibly exciting for actors to play, but also really challenging, because how do you differentiate yourself? And so I think particularly the two latest iterations of them that we've gotten are very interesting to compare against each other.
Mm-hmm. And most of the modern iterations sort of like subvert who Sherlock Holmes is. Mm. Like they pick apart the stuff that they read in the books, all the fine text, quote unquote, and then they sort of adapt that to make the new Sherlock Holmes, like Benedict Cumberbatch, Robert Downey Jr. These Sherlock Holmeses aren't the ones that you would normally see in the book. It's not the classic Sherlock Holmes. And also, which is interesting, because I don't think we've seen a classic Sherlock Holmes for like a long, long time. Like when's the last we saw a faithful adaptation of the guy in the book with the cap and the pipe and stuff?
I'm glad that you brought that up, because that was something I was thinking about before we decided to do the show, that I actually wish there was one, because neither of these two versions are. I think the closest, and I didn't actually watch this film, was Ian McKellen plays an older Sherlock Holmes, Mr. Holmes, called. And that's a very fairly faithful, but still it's a sort of twist on the concept.
It's faithful, but it's off-piste, because it's not actually based on any of the books, right? It extends it beyond. It's basically Holmes in retirement and pondering mortality, which, Arthur Conan Doyle never really did. Famously, the one time that Sherlock Holmes died in the books was because he got tired of the character.
Yes, Conan Doyle wanted to kill off the character.
Pretty much. So, you know, it was never really a space for like, let's ponder philosophy and, you know, take care of bees, which the Ian McKellen version definitely was. But we are not going to be talking about, so I just wanted to throw it out there. We aren't going to be talking about the most classic iteration of Sherlock Holmes, who was actually played by Basil Rathbone. And I'm most familiar with that version of the character through pictures and stills and clips. And I think that that one is closer to what we're talking about right now, where all the visual markers of the character are all there.
And like Arvind said, I don't think there's been one that fully embraced the literary roots of the character as much. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, listeners. I can't remember one that's actually done that ever. So that's since like the 40s.
Yeah. And we also did this show, the Supercut about characters recently. And then we spoke about how James Bond is like an archetype. Like you have other people playing spies who follow the James Bond template or the James Bond footsteps, right? I think Sherlock Holmes is also an archetype. You see adaptations of Sherlock Holmes outside of Sherlock Holmes. Scooby-Doo and the Mystery Gang, they are like an adaptation of Sherlock Holmes in a big way. The way they solve mysteries, the way they it's always the person you don't expect.
The magnifying
Batman,
glass.
You know, the magnifying glass. Batman, in a way, is an adaptation of Sherlock Holmes when he calls himself the world's greatest detective. That's a throwback to Sherlock Holmes. But yeah, you know, it is. I don't know if the original is not as interesting, or maybe it's supposed to be confined to the books, that the more modern ones sort of like take twists and turns. Or maybe it's because the book sort of alluded to him being a lot more complicated than he than it is on the surface level. So they wanted to explore that more than just showing him as, you know, this detective who solves crimes.
Sherlock Holmes has always been a favorite character of mine. I love him as a reader. I've enjoyed almost every iteration I've seen of him on screen. And I think that you're hitting a number of important areas here, Arvin, which is fundamentally that he's a really fun character, right? Because he's a little bit cold, he's a bit aloof. So there's stuff about him that is fundamentally quite fun and funny to play with. You know, he's the straight guy, right? Other characters can kind of revolve around that. He's also almost supernaturally intelligent, but he's also weirdly, for somebody who is kind of in another version of the character, would be kind of nerdy, he's also quite physically capable. He boxes, he is a drug addict, he plays the violin. So there's a bunch of different things going on there. And like you said, I think the books make reference to the fact that maybe there's something underneath it, but the books also are quite happy to allow him to remain a mystery. And I think it is that mystery bit that has caused modern filmmakers to go, all right, let's really kind of exploit that area.
Mm. And I also think that it's partly what you said, Arvin, that there are so many mystery films, TV shows already. I mean, the crime genre is so huge in so many. We have so many TV procedural shows that maybe it feels a little old-fashioned to dedicate a show entirely just to that format of weekly crime solving, which they could do with the Basil Rathbone shows. Unfortunately, now even the Benedict Cumberbatch series, which is probably the closest, that's not true. I'm not a big fan of Elementary, but Elementary did do the procedural format.
So I love Elementary. I did not watch Elementary for the longest time because of the BBC Sherlock and its success and how much I enjoyed it. But Elementary is very different in the sense that it is quite happy to hew quite close to the idea of what Sherlock is, which is somebody who is fundamentally out there, an iconoclast who's just going around solving crimes with a Watson. That's basically it. Except that they also introduce complexity in the form of his addiction. They introduce complexity in the form of, I suppose, modernity, the idea of modernness, of being a modern rich kid's isolated from his family. There's a lot going on. Johnny Lee Miller's performance as Sherlock is fantastic. I really, really love Lucy Liu as Dr. Joan Watson, simply because they don't bend over backwards to try and make it a girl power thing. They don't do that much. It just works. They have a lot of chemistry, which is what you need for a Holmes and Watson. And it's actually one of my favorite iterations of this story told on screen, because it is just a procedural, but you know, a bit atas, like a slightly atas procedural.
So that's the thing, right? I don't know if I have a favorite iteration of Sherlock Holmes outside the classics. And even though all the newer ones sort of have their modern takes on Sherlock, I would want to see a classic take on Sherlock again. Like I would enjoy it. Like I'm the one guy who might enjoy it.
No, I would. So, I definitely would.
I would.
Not
pay for
a modern one either.
Exactly, like Murder on the Orient Express, sort of like a straight take on Sherlock Holmes. I would genuinely enjoy something like that. But like you said, maybe it's difficult to make that for today's audience, so they don't want to go for it. But if that was on a poster, I would pay for it.
So we are talking today about Sherlock Holmes, the character, the concept. So far, we've been talking primarily about why it is that I think he's been such an interesting character. We've also touched on the classics, and we've also mentioned Elementary. After this, we're going to be talking about the Sherlocks that I think have come out in the last decade and have really come to define what we think of as Sherlock Holmes in the modern era. If you'd like to weigh in on your favorite version of Sherlock Holmes, you can let us know what that is. WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Banish fraudulent maneuvers. BFM 89.9.
We don't know a thing about each other. I don't know where we're meeting. I don't even know your name. I know you're an army doctor and you've been invalided home from Afghanistan. I know you've got a brother who's worried about you, but you won't go to him for help because you don't approve of him, possibly because he's an alcoholic, more likely because he recently walked out on his wife. And I know that your therapist thinks you're limp psychosomatic, quite correctly, I'm afraid. It's enough to be going on with, don't you think? The name's Sherlock Holmes and the address is 221B Baker Street.
Hello, you are listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Arvin and Shamila. And today on Throwback Tuesday, we're throwing it back to the character of Sherlock Holmes and the different films and shows that he has been in, spearheaded, you know, just the different ways in which we've seen him. So we've mentioned Johnny Lee Miller and Elementary. Which one do you guys want to talk about next? The Cumberbatch or the Downey Jr.?
Well, just chronologically, Downey Jr. comes first. And I think it gets a little bit of a bad rap now, right? Because unfortunately, the Guy Ritchie movie remake of Sherlock Holmes came out just 1 year, 2009, before Benedict Cumberbatch's almost career-making portrayal of Sherlock Holmes. And I think just something about... They're very different. They're very, very, very different beasts. And I actually enjoy both of them a lot. But something about Cumberbatch's portrayal just blows everything about this out of the water. And I think that's kind of why it's not as fashionable to talk about the movie anymore.
Yeah, I don't know if Robert Downey played Sherlock Holmes now, if it would have been more popular than if he played it back then. I think it's because Robert Downey Jr. is always Robert Downey Jr. No matter what role he's playing, he's always that type. He's Tony Stark. And he just did Iron Man. So it's difficult to step into the shoes of someone as big as Sherlock Holmes and make that like that complete transition. So maybe that's why. But I enjoy those films a lot. Like for what they are, they're like fun popcorn movies. They're not something that I would name as like prestige films or like this is the Sherlock film that you have to watch. But if it's going on like TV or I'm like channel surfing and it comes on, I would definitely like stay on that one of those movies, the first or the second, and give it a shot. But like you said, you know, it doesn't compare to the Benedict Cumberbatch Sherlock, which is kind of like up there.
I think that the Robert Downey Jr. versions, the main thing about them is the chemistry is tight, which you always need for any Sherlock. I think that's the defining, outside of the intelligence and all that, we failed to really hone in on Watson. But Watson is the really crucial component of any Sherlock story because they are the humanizing factor. Like without them, Sherlock is just horrid. Like he treats everybody terribly. And Watson is like the redeeming quality in any sort of Sherlock story. And so I think that the Jude Law, Robert Downey Jr. chemistry is really cantankerous and kind of beautiful and fun to watch. And I like them because they're action movies. I mean, yeah, he's smart and he's Sherlock, but also because it's directed by Guy Ritchie, fundamentally there is a real action kinetic sensibility to those films.
And it's captured really well in that first time, in the first film, where we see Robert Downey Jr. kind of mapping out how he's going to, I think it's in a boxing match, and he maps out in his head how he's going to put his opponent out. And it's lovely. And it has all of those great things that you love about the older Guy Ritchie films, that stylishness, that sort of brazen quality.
Male bonding.
And it is also one of the few that actually sets it in a period setting. And I like that as well. That might be why I like it. It's very, there's a lot of steampunk that's going on about the film. It's very nice to watch. I love the action as well. I think the film would have held up a lot better if we never had a Benedict Cumberbatch Sherlock. I really do think so.
Which brings us neatly to the Benedict Cumberbatch, Martin Freeman, Mark Gatiss, Stephen Moffat kind of square of BBC Sherlock that I think, like you said, really blew everyone out of the water when it first came out. I feel like we need to establish what we're talking about here, though, because I don't think it's unfair to say that in the later seasons, the show kind of completely runs... I don't know if off the rails is right. It just takes off and goes into very weird very weird places. But the first two seasons, maybe even up to season three, just stupendous.
Well, I will straight up confess that I stopped at season two because I enjoyed them, but you know, anyone who's watched them will know that this show takes commitment. Each episode is actually almost feature length, so each episode is 1.5 hours. So it's almost like often they sort of do a mystery an episode, but sometimes they stretch them over a couple of episodes as well.
And it's a mystery plus personal drama in each episode,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah. Yeah, and so I've always wanted to pick up again, but for some reason, it's the kind of show that I'm quite happy not knowing what happens next. Each episode is very watchable on its own. I love the performances, but I'm not sad that I didn't watch until season 4.
So I'm going to admit that I don't watch the show in sequence. It's something that I put on. I watch it the same way I watch Modern Family. I just jump around seasons and pick whichever episode I haven't seen. And they're not a lot of episodes. So it's all kind of like it's shorter seasons, feature length, and it comes out once every 1.5 to 2 years, maybe. So there's not a lot to choose from. I don't care much for the story in the Benedict Cumberbatch Sherlock. I just enjoy watching Benedict Cumberbatch take it to 11 and chew up scenery every time he's there. And it's become a kind of a meme, right? It's a kind of a trope, the way he solves the crimes and he sees the numbers in his head, and the way he's sort of like aloof and he's completely antisocial. Those are the things that I enjoy watching. So I don't watch the show for Sherlock or for the crime solving or for the story or to figure out what's going to happen to Sherlock. I watch it simply because I really like Benedict Cumberbatch and the way he plays the character.
I'm a super dedicated Sherlock person. So like I've seen all of them in sequence, guys. I don't get this.
And in completion. So yes. We've both been the bad kids in the class today.
No, I mean, I didn't watch it for this show, right? I just watched it because I wanted to know what was going to happen. I was committed to the Sherlock journey. And I think it's for that reason that myself and perhaps other people like me found such disappointment in the later seasons, because it's like, wait, where are you? No, never mind. And I think when you expect people to sit through, like you said, right, like 1.5 hours, 3 episodes per season, you do need to ensure that what you're giving them is something that they want to watch. But I think Benedict Cumberbatch is just amazing. Mm. I mean, the level of commitment for the performance that he puts in is crazy. I think Martin Freeman's Watson is just...
Oh, he's beautiful. He's such a beautiful Watson. Yeah, I love Jude Law. I really do. But Jude Law works as a pair. Watson just... Oh, Martin Freeman is just lovely.
I think Martin Freeman is the kind of Watson you get when you read the books. Like if you had to picture a Watson, it's Martin Freeman. Somehow. I don't know how that works, but it's him. It's him if you could draw him.
I think it's the sort of very human exasperation that he manages to convey with the whole, are you kidding me with this? That I really, really enjoy. I will also say that I like how both the BBC Sherlock and CBS's Elementary, how they both integrate the internet into the Sherlock story.
Yes.
Because much as we're talking about the classic Sherlock, and I do hear what you guys are saying, I would love to see, you know, the proper hat, the whole getup. But I enjoy watching Sherlock function in an age of the internet.
No, I absolutely do. And I think that the BBC Sherlock is actually a great example of updating that story to fit in with a modern world well, because the truth is, with technology, a lot of how old Sherlock, quote unquote, would operate is made obsolete. So you need to figure out a way to make him relevant, to make him different. And I think the BBC Sherlock does it really well. The other thing it does really well is, of course, to make a case for why Sherlock is the way he is. It's very clear from watching the BBC version that Sherlock is not neurotypical in a sense. So we're also getting a story of Watson kind of realizing that. So there's a huge amount of empathy that Martin Freeman brings to that role in terms of realizing that Sherlock doesn't actually mean to be this way. He's not necessarily an awful person. He just really processes the world very differently. And that's something we know now, which they didn't know back when Basil Rathbone, for instance, was playing the role. So I think there's, if you were going to update Sherlock to fit in with a modern space, I really don't think anyone will be able to beat the way BBC did it.
So I'm just going to bring up one adaptation of Sherlock Holmes, and I just realized that it's one of my favorite, and it's Holmes and Watson, Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly.
And I knew you were going to be the one to bring it up.
So I don't want to admit it. It's not like it's nothing to be proud of, but I really enjoyed that adaptation. And if you think about a Holmes and Watson, like if you think about a pairing, very few people pair in Hollywood the way Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly pair. And they work like perfectly together. And I didn't expect to enjoy that film, but I enjoyed it a lot. It's also kind of one of the most faithful adaptations. So I take back what I said in the start that we haven't had a period piece in a while, because it is a period piece in a way, and they are wearing the proper attire, they are doing the proper things, they are in the proper era solving the proper crimes. So Will Ferrell brought us the best Sherlock adaptation that we've had in like 20 years, 25 years.
Are we using the word proper correctly?
Correctly. But also I feel like this is just a great entry point for you to share your actual favorite Sherlock, Lynn.
Look, I wouldn't say it's my favorite, but it's my first. I think if you guys have not seen Sherlock Hound, then there is a very good reason to go back and check that out. And, you know, it's just fun. It's very charming. I don't know what else you want
me
to say.
He has the hat and the pipe.
Exactly. And the ears. So what I will say in closing on the subject of Sherlock is that I think that Sherlock and Bond are very different in the sense that I don't need or want necessarily to see Bond adapt. I think Casino Royale is just about as much of a backstory as I would want. The whole Daniel Craig sequence, I think that's about it. That's as much of Bond's childhood that I want to get into. But Sherlock does offer opportunities for, like you said, to talk about addiction, to talk about neuro differences, to talk even about mental illness, isolation. There are a lot of different areas and avenues that Sherlock as an archetypical character offer you to explore that I think other archetypes don't.
No, I completely agree. And I think I would very happily watch many, many adaptations of Sherlock. And I think there are lots of reasons why. You mentioned Murder on the Orient Express earlier, Arvind. And I think Agatha Christie novels have that same tone in that there's just infinite ways in which a mystery is already interesting. And then all of these amazing characters. And you can reimagine that in so many settings. And I can see it working in so many ways.
Yeah, there's so many ways to spin that story and tell it again and again. I have only one question. Does Sherlock Hound solve the Hound of Baskerville's mystery? How does that work? In that context, is it like him, you know, investigating another dog?
Maybe he's investigating a man.
Yeah.
Oh.
I can't remember. I don't know whether he actually addresses that meta-ness.
I don't know. But every good Sherlock adaptation will need to hit at certain points. Scarlet Letter, Hound of Baskervilles. So there are certain must-dos. I don't remember how Sherlock Hound did it, if I'm being entirely honest. Let us know anyway what your favorite Sherlock tellings and adaptations have been. Who's been your favorite Sherlock on screen? You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio, write to us at movies@bfm.my, and also find us on both Twitter and Instagram. We are BFM Popcorn. You're listening to Popcorn Culture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.